Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. This is an episode of Reflection, what made 2017 television go, and saying farewell to a collection of on- and off-camera talent taking our leave over the last 12 months. And you are invited to join in. Also ahead, Yes, Virginia, there's one more Netflix original out this year. We'll tell you what it is. The NFL Sunday Night Football Scrooge turn, our classic trivia question this week, and a Rod Serling-written buried treasure recovered by Turner Classic Movies is our show to know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, it's the day after Christmas 2017, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the 2017 New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details in a few minutes. On behalf of everybody at Blog Talk Radio and iHeartRadio, we hope you had a fantastic extended holiday weekend, and welcome aboard to our next to last edition of the year of the program All That's Run on Television. 27 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Looks like we're going to be in the deep freeze for a while, but we're delighted to have you with us, and we definitely want to invite you to be part of today's program. All it takes, a phone call with your voice, and all you have to do is use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a chat room open as well. We invite you to put your thoughts in there, too. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Let's start today's edition with some news notes. No final Sunday Night Football game of 2017 on NBC this coming Sunday, a.k.a. New Year's Eve. Chalk that up to a Christmas Eve decision by the National Football League. Rationale? Worries that the game would end up having no impact on the playoffs 1 week later. That game will now be played Sunday afternoon, leaving NBC with a New Year's Eve programming hole to quickly fill. No announcement yet what NBC will do. Meantime, many NFL fans weren't aware NBC did carry a game late yesterday afternoon into early evening. The game was moved to yesterday, short notice again, so NBC could do its annual Christmas Eve replay of the classic film, It's a Wonderful Life. In case you wondered, the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Houston Texans handily. Personal thought, I thought this was a big Scrooge move by the National Football League. No reason why they could not have played the game on New Year's Eve and maybe done it at an earlier time, let's say 7 o'clock rather than 8:30, so NBC could have gotten the game in before the new year gets underway. Netflix offered a post-Christmas gift to its customers this morning, a second season of Travelers, the time travel saga with Will and Grace co-star Eric McCormick. The series, created by former Stargate SG-1 and the Islanders remake writer-producer Brad Wright, was launched last fall. Travelers U.S. and worldwide Netflix release was coordinated with the season debut on Showcase, the popular Canadian-based pay network. Amazon claims its Fire TV streaming stick, with lesser capability built in, was one of its top-selling products purchased over the just-concluded holiday shopping season. More than twice as many Fire TV sticks compared to 2016, according to Jeff Wilk, the chief executive of Amazon's worldwide consumer operations. Finally, there's no decision yet from the Weinstein Company's board over accepting a bid to sell all of some of its assets, including its TV unit. Anywhere from 6 to 12 bids were proposed at a board meeting Friday afternoon. We'll keep you posted on that story. And that is news notes for today. Well, the rest of today's program, beginning with our classic trivia question of the week and our annual remembrance to Bobby Telhouse Remembers after some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Yes, the holiday season is over in terms of shopping, but guess what? There's still some days left to this year, and next year, of course, is going to be underway a week from now. So if you're still in the mood to do some shopping as a gift for you or someone you love, guess what? I'd like to invite you to perhaps take out a subscription to Audible.com, because listening is the new reading here at Audible. And as you like to say around here, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. It makes a great gift for you or someone you love to wrap the year by or start the new year on a great note. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from, including the terrific book, Norse Mythology, written by American God Maker himself, Neil Gaiman. He narrates this as well. And with those 90,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. All you have to do is sign up at this URL. It's audibletrial.com/televised. Audibletrial.com/televised. And all you got to do is go there, sign up, get one free audio book, 1 month trial of service, and because Audible's from Amazon.com, it's great customer service. You'll get every step of the way. Don't forget, Audible.com is also the prime development partner of the 2017 New York Television Festival. So if you're still looking for a great post-holiday gift or a great gift to start the year on, either for you or your loved one, try on a subscription to Audible.com. All you got to do is go to this URL anytime you like, audibletrial.com/televised, and hear for yourself why Audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. I am so determined that before the end of this year, we will give away our final prize of the year. That's the new book previously on X-Men by one of our guests earlier this month, the terrific X-Men cartoon writer, producer Eric Lawal, that we're going to replay one more time the current classic trivia question. And it's this. Name the prison in Orange is the New Black. Name the prison in Orange is the New Black. First correct answer we get before Friday, and you can win previously on X-Men. All you got to do, get the answer in by email, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full email address. If you get it in by Friday afternoon on our next program, you will win previously on X-Men. We'd love to give this away. We've had a lot of good winners from all over the country so far this year. Let's have one more before we wrap the year up. All you got to do, email it, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. If you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook. Also, my Twitter handle, UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do it, and may you have the very best. For a long, long time, Turner Classic Movies has wrapped up its year in part with a beautifully produced feature called TCM Remembers. It is perhaps the most comprehensive showcase of people in front of and behind of the motion picture camera and the entertainment scene who passed away, who died over the last 12 months. It's always done to a wonderfully melancholy, wistful original tune. It's beautifully photographed, and it not only appears on TCM the last few weeks of the year, it is also running on YouTube. If you haven't seen it yet, go either way to see it, TCM or YouTube. It's absolutely beautiful. It's one of the very best, I think, they've ever done. And 6 years ago, we were very inspired by it so much. I said, hey, if they can do this for the movies, why can't we do something like this for television? So as an annual tradition, we started our own sort of remembrance called Tomorrow We Televise Remembers, where we focus solely on television, and we try to make this as comprehensive as possible. First, the folks off camera, and then on camera. We're going to do, usually we wait to the second half of the hour to do this, but we're going to get it out of the way now because of two things. Number one, there was an extraordinary number of on-camera people, personalities, people who inhabited some of those best-known characters of our generation and generations before in television, and even people who were great both in front and behind the camera that we had to get them in. It was an extraordinary number, and in fact, the number kept growing even into last night. In fact, our final listing will be somebody who passed away just last night. And secondly, the nature of the people who passed away this year, more so than in recent years, was so iconic. And I think as we go through this, you will get that, particularly, as I said, the on-camera people. Just so many iconic people who contributed to television in so many different ways, as actors, as comedians, as singers, as performers, people in variety shows, people in sitcoms, dramas, specials, variety shows, you name it. It's all over the map. And that's why we wanted this year, rather than wait till the second half of the program, to showcase it through most of the first half. And it's a long list. So, and by the way, I want to say in advance, we tried to make this as comprehensive as possible. I will apologize in advance if we didn't get certain people in. And I would love to hear from you what you think. So please, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I would love to get your feedback as we now present the 2017 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised members. And let's start first with the people behind the camera. Most people know Jonathan Demme as the director of such classic movies as Silence of the Lambs, but he also was an episodic TV director during parts of his career, including last year doing an episode or more of the Fox acclaimed miniseries Shots Fired. He also was one of the directors on The Killing on AMC and even directed an episode or two of Saturday Night Live. Anthony Harvey was best known for his collaborations on film with Katharine Hepburn, winning an Oscar for his work in the 1967 classic movie The Lion and Winner. But 4 or 5 years after that, he did a made-for-TV movie that may have been the best adaptation of a Tennessee Williams play you will ever see on television, The Glass Menagerie, featuring a magnificent performance by Hepburn, also featuring Sam Worthington, Joanna Frank, and in one of his first performances, an Emmy Award-winning one, by Michael Moriarty. Harvey directed it, a wonderful piano score by John Barry. It was classic television. And you can see, I believe, it on YouTube. Check it out. Anthony Harvey passed away this year. Richard Chickle originally made his fame as the TV critic and film critic for Life magazine. But then he did a series for PBS called The Men Who Made the Movies, whose subject matter included Alfred Hitchcock and classic directors like Raoul Walsh and William Wellman. In time, he became a producer, writer, director of his own work about the world of film, many of which were on specials and miniseries for PBS. Toby Hooper is most identified with films like Poltergeist and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre as a director. But he also, down the road, became a television episode director. He did a terrific episode about The Equalizer, one of the few dealing with the world of the homeless. In fact, it was a holiday program called No Place Like Home. He also did an episode of the sci-fi miniseries involving Steven Spielberg, Taken, and also an underrated series for UPN called Nowhere Man. When Jeffrey Hayden couldn't find work as an actor, he turned to television directing, and he became one of the most prolific episode directors in the history of the medium. He did everything: comedy, variety, straight drama, action-adventure. There was no genre that Jeffrey Hayden couldn't do. He also passed away late last year. Martin Ritterhoff was the executive producer of some very popular films in the 1960s and 70s, films like The Cincinnati Kid. But he also did something special in television. He was the founder of Filmways, the independent TV studio behind some of the most popular comedies of the 1960s, from Mr. Ed to Beverly Hillbillies to Green Acres and Petticoat Junction. He passed away a few weeks ago. And last weekend, we said goodbye to Dominic Frontier, the film and TV composer who composed some of his best work for television. Especially, he was the person who made the first season of The Outer Limits sing. His music score probably was the best thing he ever did for that series. And from the opening notes telling the control voice to tell us, there is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. To his individual episode scores, Frontieri's music was absolute magic. He helped bring to life, as both musician and as the production executive, of one of the best science fiction series, one of the best genre series of its kind ever created. Frontier went on to do such shows as The Invaders, Vegas, Matt Houston, and he won an Oscar nomination and a Golden Globe nomination for his score for the movie The Stuntman. We could spend a whole hour talking about Roger Ailes, both as one of the key pioneers of talk variety television in the daytime with The Mike Douglas Show, and more notably as the creator of the Fox News Channel and Fox Business Network. We could do that. And I know that we could spend a whole hour on the whole politics and what he did, and how he used the Fox News Channel in that regard. We will not do that today. But suffice it to say, his contributions to television on both counts were immense. With Mike Douglas, first in Cleveland, then in Philadelphia, he really, with the help of associate producer and then producer Woody Frazier, he literally single-handedly transformed the talk variety show. We had such things as the weekly guest host by originating the show someplace instead of New York or Los Angeles, Cleveland the first few years, then Philadelphia for the rest of the run. Of course, Douglas was a marvelous host who could handle any kind of guest any which way. It was a very special, lively 90 minutes every day, Monday through Friday. And Fox News Channel, of course, started out as a folly and then became the most popular cable news channel of its kind. No matter what you think of the politics or how you think it goes, it was a big success story. And now, Fox Business Network, again, now the most popular business channel of its kind in television. And yes, Marjorie Ellis, in a way, set off the whole sexual harassment situation. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. But his, definitely no question, he was an innovator in the world of television. And finally, behind the scenes, Charlie Murphy, the comedian who worked with Dave Chappelle on his Comedy Central classic, Chappelle's Show, both as writer and co-performer. And now, a very long list of people on camera. And we begin with somebody who passed away last Thursday night, who we had major tribute to on this program last Friday, Dick Hedberg. As versatile, as incredible, as passionate and fun a sportscaster as possible. If you were a commentator with Dick Hedberg, you knew you had a wonderful partner and you could say your piece and Engler would go along with you 100%. He was as versatile a sportscaster as ever was, covering everything from pro football, baseball, college basketball, the Olympics, et cetera, et cetera. He also later became a wonderful essayist. He was also a good game show host. He showed that with a long-running series, Sports Challenge. And if he had done more game shows, I think he would have been up there in the pantheon with Bill Collins and Bob Barker and many others, and Alan Ludd and so forth, among the best game show hosts of all time. Dick Hedberg passed away before this past weekend. Whether you told him or what can you say about her, starting with her unforgettable collaboration with Dick Van Dyke on The Dick Van Dyke Show, for 5 years, one of the best situation comedies around. And then in the 1970s, in two ways, he transformed television. First, by showcasing women in the workplace in a heretofore unusual light with The Mary Tyler Moore Show, one of the funniest sitcoms of the 70s and all times. But her lasting contribution, I think, was with her former husband, Graham Tinker, in setting up MTM Enterprises, one of the best independent TV studios ever, a pioneer in TV comedy and then in TV drama. The shows range from all those spin-offs of MTM, Rhoda, Phyllis, Lou Grant, The White Shadow, and two of the classic dramas of the 1980s, Hill Street Blues and Saint Elsewhere. And Mary Tyler Moore, behind and in front of the camera, was one of the most delightful people around. Also a tireless crusader for the Juvenile Diabetes Foundation. In the 1950s, Elena Verdugo was the star of Meet Millie, one of the few live sitcoms around on CBS, ran several years. But in the 1970s, she got more fame in later years as the nurse assistant to Margaret Welby, MD, played by Robert Young, was nominated several times for an Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama. Peter Merrill, when she was the wife of Cliff Robertson, you would find her a lot in episodic television, always brought grace and style and wonderful acting to any role she did. Wendell Burton became known for his role as the first live-action Charlie Brown in the special You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the off-Broadway musical. He later appeared opposite Liza Minnelli in the hit film The Sterile Cuckoo, did other TV episodes of the episode of Kung Fu, then later went on to develop himself as a Christian television star. But Wendell Burton was a terrific actor who, from first to last, always gave a good performance. Miguel Ferrer was the son of the brilliant actor Jose and director Jose Ferrer, but he also had to have his own career, including several years as the co-star of the NBC hit Crossing Jordan with Joe Hennessy. Harry Dean Stanton, he was a picture in many a Western and many a very unusual drama, both in film and on television. More than 50 TV shows had him, and any time he was around, he was dynamite, including the original Showtime miniseries Paris, Texas. Richard Anderson, character actor, journeyman actor all over the place, found lasting fame in the 1970s as the boss of Lee Majors, the $6 Million Man, playing Oscar. Ann Jeffries, terrific star in the 1950s television, with her then husband Robert Sterling, she was Marion Kirby, one of the ghosts with the most on Topper. Robert Sterling, and Leo G. Carroll made a wonderful trio for two seasons on network television. Joseph Baranda was a popular comedian, comedy writer of both film and television, had a little short fame in television by being the star of the NBC musical drama Rags to Riches. Lola Albright, speaking of musical stars, she had a wonderful jazzy voice. Best known as Peter Gunn's girlfriend on the series of that name, she always find her performing at Mother's Nightclub and always doing great, particularly with that wonderful Henry Mancini music. Lola Albright was a terrific actress, and I think very underrated as both actress and singer. Remember Rocky the Flying Squirrel? Remember the voice behind Rocky? That was a woman, one of the first women to break into television in a big way behind the scenes, June Foray. She did a lot of the female characters on that show and went on to have an incredible productive career and set the stage for many more women to follow her in the world of voice-over animated acting. And there will be no voice like June Foray doing Rocky the Flying Squirrel and her wonderful byplay with Bullwinkle the Moose. She passed away this year. Martin Landau was a journeyman in television and film. Remember him from North by Northwest? He played the co-villain with James Mason. And also did a lot of other things in television. And then he came his starring role as Roland Hand, the master impersonator, with his then wife Barbara Bain on the Emmy Award-winning groundbreaking series Mission Impossible. Later, teamed up with Bain for two seasons in the syndicated sci-fi drama Space 1999. From first to last, wonderful actor, did all sorts of things in television. I think a marvelous, marvelous performer in both film and TV. Glenn Campbell. Hi, I'm Glenn Campbell. He opened many a Sunday night with the Good Time Hour, featuring many of his hit tunes, terrific variety show, one of the great ones of the 1970s. He passed away a few months ago after a brave way to wrap up his career when faced with Alzheimer's. Powers Booth, very powerful actor. First saw him on episodic television, and then he had his Emmy Award-winning role playing the patriarch of a clan that would fall to doom in Africa, Jim Jones, the Guyana tragedy. Powers Booth also will be notable for being the only actor who ever accepted an Emmy Award the year that most of the Emmy people boycotted that ceremony. He was the only one that accepted his award for Best Actor in a Miniseries for playing Jim Jones. Stephen Furst. A lot of people first saw him in National Lampoon's Animal House, and then came his wonderful role in St. Elsewhere, where he spent a good chunk of that run as one of the best characters, one of the brightest characters in that show, placing one of the orderlies. Remember M.K. Bronson? It was sort of Route 66 on a motorcycle. The person who played Bronson, Michael Parks, good actor, also good singer too, did the theme song at the end every day, every episode. He passed away this year. And so did Adam West, forever Batman. There may be other Batman in film or television, but he's the one from TV we will all remember. And a wonderful actor and more versatile actor than you give him credit for. Before he did Batman, he was also featured on The Detectives, on other shows as well. Terrific actor, and somebody who took his fame as Batman, someone called Stereotype Fame, to heart in years to come. Richard Hatch, he was one of the original stars of the original version of Battlestar Galactica, the co-star with Lauren Green and Dirk Benedict. He passed away this year, had a great time behind the scenes also as a writer-director. Some of the great people have women behind them. In the case of Stan Lee of Marvel Comics fame, there was Joan Lee, who worked with Stan on a bunch of projects, including some of the Marvel cartoons, doing voiceover work. Roger Smith in the 1960s was Mr. Roberts, but he became better known as the wife, the husband, and impresario of Anne Margaret, guided her career to beautiful heights. And then fought a wonderful battle against illness that he ultimately succumbed to this year. William Christopher, one of the fun characters of MASH. He played the very saintly and sprightly Father Mulcahy for so many years. Don Rickles never had a long-running show. He tried in variety in a number of sitcoms. His longest-running show ran only two seasons, CPO Sharky. But as a master of insult humor, really, the one and only grandmaster of insult humor. Anytime that man appeared on a Dean Martin roast, on variety shows, on any talk variety show, he would just crack the place up like earthquake style with his remarks. Always off the cuff. You never knew what he was going to say, but you knew whatever came out of his mouth was going to be very funny, funny. He was also a wonderful actor. Don Rickles, who had wonderful fame from first to last, including later fame in the Toy Story movies playing Mr. Potato Head, he passed away this year. And I'm going to miss Don very much. I found his humor so side-splitting every single time. He never could fail. We also lost Barbara Hale, Perry Mason's right-hand person, Adela Street, in the long-running lawyer show that ran nine seasons on CBS. Another character actor who found fame, John Hilliman. He played opposite Tom Selleck in Magnum P.I., another long-running series also on CBS. Roger Moore was a co-star on several television series, first Maverick, then The Alaskans for a season, and then he found everlasting fame as TV's Simon Templar on The Saint, a show that first ran in syndication and then for three seasons on NBC. And from there, classy movie fame as James Bond. Roger Moore showcased a lot of class. He was Mr. Debonair, so much fun to watch, always well-spoken, just the best hero you could ever root for, and also a first-class act, I understand, off the screen, too. The TV career of Jerry Lewis was in one way remarkable and in one way long-lasting in a very unexpected way. First, with his partner Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin ruled the roost in television comedy with their long run on the Colgate Comedy Hour. They were the Beatles of television comedy, drawing millions of people in the 1950s to their live antics on that show and on other programs as well. When Martin Lewis split up in the late 1950s, Jerry tried to make a career on his own television. With variety shows, it didn't totally last. He did some specials for NBC. He tried a dramatic performance in the remake of The Jazz Singer, one of the few television versions of that particular drama. And then he did his own variety show on ABC, two-hour experiment, canceled after 13 weeks. Then came the late NBC series Sketch Comedy that ran two seasons, probably his most longest-running show. But the biggest long-running venture he did in television was the charity that consumed him for a great chunk of his life as executive chairman of the Muskogee Association. I'm talking, of course, about the annual Labor Day Telethon for the Muskogee Association, a telethon that ran more than four decades, first locally here in New York, on then WAWTV Channel 5, and then finally on a Love Network that at its peak had more than 200 stations in the United States and Canada. That lineup, and what Jerry was able to do with it, raised more than $2 billion for NBA. Again, we could spend a whole hour talking about what made Jerry and NBA part company, how NBA has fared since, et cetera, et cetera. We will not do that here. But suffice to say this, while Jerry Lewis did not see the cure for MD in his lifetime, a lifetime that spanned more than 90 years, he did see the fact that when he started to advocate funds for muscular dystrophy, if you had MD as a child, chances were you didn't live past 10 or 15 or 20. If you did, you were one of the, quote, lucky people. But now, in this day, 2017, the majority of people that have muscular dystrophy, the 40 new muscular diseases that create as a whole muscular dystrophy, they are living longer lives, and they're living more hopeful lives because of the breakthroughs that your dollars gave for research, for patient care, for summer camps, for all sorts of other entertainment activities. And Jerry can go to the grave knowing that he really did accomplish an incredible lifetime. And he also, I think, was able to see before he died that the cures, the treatments that will ultimately rid this planet of the 40 neuromuscular diseases, that is the whole creating muscular dystrophy, will be eradicated. I really believe that he went to his grave knowing that. And let's hope that with one final push, we can make that real. Robert Guillaume was a wonderful performer on Broadway and off-Broadway. And then in the 1970s, he had the character called Benson, one of the smarter characters on the popular ABC series Soap. And when Soap decided to spin off a character, it was Robert Guillaume's character that made it, Benson. Robert was, I think, won the Best Supporting Actor Award and also nominated for an Emmy Award for Best Actor for his role in Benson, which had a great run, actually a longer run, than Soap did. Golly! Yes, I'm referring to Jim Nabors. Jim, of course, famous with Gomer Pyle of USMC, also did his own variety show for two seasons on CBS. He had one of the best baritone voices you ever could hear. Carol Burnett always would put him on the first episode of her series every year as his quote-unquote good luck charm. And then, of course, Jim every year went to Indiana to do the national anthem, the statewide anthem, going back home in Indiana for the Indianapolis 500 races. Jim Nabors had a wonderful voice and also had a sensational career. And he lived his life beautifully, both on and off his native home base of Hawaii. Earl Hyman was one of the first African-American actors to show up on television. I remember him and Ruby Dee from a wonderful episode of East Side, West Side, dealing with the issue of housing blockbusters, an episode called No Hiding Place. Check it out on YouTube. It was an episode way ahead of its time. But Earl, later on, two decades later, had lasting fame as Bill Cosby's father on The Cosby Show. Robert Osborne, for many, many years, covered the world of Hollywood for The Hollywood Reporter. He later did TV reviews and entertainment news on the morning program, the short-lived CBS morning news program. But his biggest fame and his everlasting fame until this year was as the primetime host of Turner Classic Movies. For more than 15 years, he entertained us with his wonderful knowledge of movies and his terrific private screening interviews with some of the legendary figures of Hollywood, from Betty Hutton to Mickey Rooney. Robert Osborne passed away after a long illness. He was one of the great hosts. I wish I had a chance to meet him directly. But it was always a pleasure to hear what he had to say about the world of movies. I Think I Love You was one of the big hits in the 1970s. You can thank David Cassidy for that. He was the co-star with Shirley Jones of the Partridge Family. And it was a show that had family ties on and off the screen. Cassidy had and the Partridge Family had a string of wonderful hits. Beyond I Think I Love You, which was the number one for several weeks running, whether it was Point Me the Direction of Albuquerque, I'll Meet You Halfway, other great songs too. And Cassidy himself had a very good solo music career as well. When you talk about jazz singers, nobody could do it like Della Reese. In the 1960s, she had her own talk variety show in syndication. I can't explain why it lasted a year. It was a lot of fun. I watched it every week on WWR-TV, now WWR-TV here in New York. And in more recent years, of course, she was the prototype archangel to Roma Downey on the long-running CBS series Touched by an Angel. Monty Hall was one of Canada's great gifts to the world of game show hosting. He was the mayor of Video Village, not the first one, but the best known one. Of course, he achieved everlasting fame as the co-creator, producer, and host of Let's Make a Deal, which continues to be one of the most popular shows in the history of game shows, both daytime and primetime. And luckily had a chance to see it revive the way it never could have been revived before, with Wayne Brady's host now in its ninth year on CBS. It speaks volume that when Monty Hall passed away about a couple months ago, that CBS turned around on quick notice an episode that spotlighted Monty and spotlighted his wonderful work, including his work for charity. It was a great, great hour-long tribute the way Monty would have liked. I understand he was a great guy off camera. He never took his deal fame too seriously, and he never made it be like a stereotype about what he may have thought inside. Monty Hall was, I think, a dynamite of talent, as you could find anywhere. He also created one of the best game shows, I think, in the quiz area, Split Second, and he had the chance to see a revival of it. Short-lived, it should have run longer in syndication back in the late 80s. Hugh Hefner, yes, we are including the publisher of Playboy magazine because he helped change television on the late-night scene with two series, one in the early 60s, one in the late 60s. He started the decade for two seasons with Playboy's Penthouse and then Playboy After Dark in the late 1960s, a real groundbreaker in variety television because he featured performers he would not necessarily see on television, from Thelonious Monk to James Brown. If there was a cutting-edge music act, you would find on Playboy After Dark, and for that, you can thank Hugh Hefner. Jay Thomas turned his career in local radio here in New York to a wonderful career on various sitcoms, including Cheers, and most notably, Murphy Brown. He was a wonderful comic actor. He was also a terrific radio personality who I never forgot his radio roots. He did very well in his acting career. And then there's Nelson Elias, one of the co-stars of HBO's vampire drama, True Blood. He passed away this year, too. So did Frank DeFore, one of the best writers about sports. He turned his writing into television essays for Real Sports on HBO, for a while on NBC. One of the best in his craft. Whenever you saw a Frank DeFord article or a Frank DeFord television segment, you knew you were in for very good television and some of the most well-researched and well-interviewed sports coverage away from the gridiron you could find. Speaking of characters, how about Erin Moran, who played Chachi for so many years on Happy Days, right from the get-go, then had her own spinoff for a year and a half, Joni Loves Chachi, opposite Scott Baio. If you want to know why the courtroom show is still one of the most popular aspects of daytime television, you have to thank in part Judge Joseph Wapner, the judge of the People's Court. Ran that court for over a decade, ran it with dignity and grace and an eye for really making the right ruling. He knew how to run a courtroom, and he did it beautifully. Judge Joseph Wapner passed away several months ago. And finally, our final entry, an entry that happened last night. Heather Menzies became famous in the 1960s for her role as one of the Trapp family kids in the 1965 film musical The Sound of Music, the Oscar winner for Best Picture. More than a decade later, in the midst of doing all sorts of television roles, she got the co-starring role opposite Gregory Harrison in the TV version of the MGM sci-fi classic movie Logan's Run. But later, she married actor Robert Urich, one of the top TV personalities of his day in the world of dramatic television, Vegas, The Lazarus Man, so on and so forth. And when Urich passed away from cancer, she decided to devote the rest of her life to raising money for cancer research. She herself was diagnosed more than a month ago with brain cancer. And last night, she passed away at the age of 68. Heather Menzies Urich, our final entry of this year's Tomorrow Will Be Televised Remembers. Coming up next, my top five developments of television 2017. I would love to hear from you what you think. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, DiamondApple04 by name. And I'm sure you know, a unique version of A Christmas Carol from Rod Serling that first was presented in 1964, wasn't seen for more than five decades, and then revived 5 years ago on Turner Classic Movies. Carol for Another Christmas is our show to know. We'll tell you all about that, and those top five developments have to be paused for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. Well, there's 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for AVA Live Radio. Catch that tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can hear the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. And we're also being presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Check us out regularly with our recent replays. Go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you're in, or go to podcast at the top of the screen, click that, then entertainment under categories, and you will find some of our best recent episodes. Welcome back to the Day After Christmas 2017 edition of the program All About Television. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 27 degrees at the top of the hour. It is going to be deep freeze from now until probably late next week here in New York and in many places around the country. We're delighted to have you with us. This is our next last edition of the year, and it's our reflective edition of the year, if you will. Just completed our 2017 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. We have more questions to go in terms of, on a brighter note, the top five TV developments of the year. And I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about them? Well, all you have to do, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers can anywhere catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. On our final episode, coming away this Friday at our regular time, Anthony Hobb, the popular correspondent for TechCrunch, the famous website, will join me. We'll look ahead to 2018, including a preview of what may be happening in television at CES, the big event coming up second week of the year in Las Vegas. And now it's time for the top five TV developments of 2017, the five developments which, for me, represent where TV went in a big way this year. And again, I would love to hear from you. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Is there something that we left out that you would like to put in? So again, give us a call. Go to the chat room. Let us know. We will definitely hear from you if you put your voice up or your thoughts in our chat room. At number five, Netflix, Netflix, Netflix. What a year Netflix had in the variety of its programming. It continues to be the trendsetter in programming around the world. It's interesting. More than 2 years ago, at UBS's Global Media Conference, Ted Sarandos, the chief programming officer of Netflix then and now, in a room that was packed, so packed, here in New York, that people were standing in the center aisle for more than 55 minutes. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, I see within a couple of years, we introduced a new television series every other week. Listen to that again. We will introduce a new television series every other week. Well, in 2017, he went one better. There were some weeks where he introduced more than one series. In fact, Thanksgiving week, he introduced the limited series Godless and the Spike Lee series version of his first feature movie In Color, She's Gotta Have It, produced here in New York. But all year long, Netflix presented a parade of unique television that captivated the world. From One Day at a Time, the reboot involving Norman Lear, to Godless, to 13 Reasons Why, to Grow, to Atypical, to Manhunter, to the global competition series Ultimate Beastmaster, to Lemony Snicket, a series of unexplained events, on and on and on and on and on. every series new, and most of those series getting great reviews. Yes, there were some failures. One big one, one season for the Get Down, the Baz Luhrmann series. And yes, there were some shows that came to an end, like Bloodline and some others. But for the most part, when you think about it, to introduce that many series and for most of them to get critical acclaim and to get a wide audience here in the United States and around the world, that speaks to something. And just as important, all the shows that were announced for next year and 2019, big deals like Shonda Rhimes becoming making Netflix her new home, as well as buying Millerworld, the graphic novel and comic book company, where they could have a wide variety of titles down the road, becoming Netflix series or movies or whatever. The move into how shows like American Vandal and Travelers, which started late last year, as I mentioned before, just started second season today. Just an incredible lineup, and you got to believe that Netflix is going to lead the way in 2018. But we'll have more to say about that probably on Friday. So my number five development, Netflix, Netflix, Netflix. Number four, got to be honest with you, I really didn't want to make this a top five listing. But unfortunately, the situation had to happen. And that is sexual harassment, the consequences of all the sexual harassment situations, sexual misconduct situations that have happened over the last 2 months. Starting with Harvey Weinstein, continuing with Louis C.K., Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, the producer of the DC shows on the CW, now Tavis Smiley, though Tavis is fighting back, Roy Price of Amazon Studios, a situation that also impacted much of his staff, also going out the door, on and on and on. You can't escape it because so much collateral damage to television programs currently and television programs in the works came out of this. So much so that it was, you cannot avoid the topic. If there is a bright light, it is the fact that maybe, just maybe, with all these situations coming out of the closet, let's also, by the way, add the Miss America situation over this past weekend. Maybe, just maybe, as Melissa Francis from Fox said very well a few weeks ago, by getting through all the pain now, we will end up with a better environment where women are respected in the workplace, they're able to progress as far as they can in the workplace, and the kind of behavior that has been put up with and tolerated for years may stop. At least that's my hope. This is one development I would like not to see repeated next year. So that's my number four, sexual harassment, sexual misconduct, all the collateral TV damage. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, you got to feel sorry for the Weinstein Company projects, their TV unit, the producers of such shows as Charlie Rose and Tavis Smiley, all the Louis C.K. shows like Better Things that now have a bit of a tar on them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You feel for everybody involved who had nothing to do with what the notable people involved did, and in some cases, like Harvey Weinstein did for so many years. Number three on my top five TV development list, the era of plentiful and diverse television. I put the two hand in hand. Yes, more than 500 scripted series were on television this year, and it wasn't just Netflix. It was the broadcast network stepping up, the cable network stepping up, Hulu, Amazon, et cetera. Hulu, of course, coming out with one of the top TV series of the year, The Handmaid's Tale, best drama winner. All the comedies that came out, more offbeat television, more cinematic television, more television produced with unique production techniques, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, more diverse television. We saw it all over the place, whether it was Dear White People, She's Gotta Have It, a brand new season, the final season of American Crime, Shots Fired, et cetera, et cetera. More programs featuring people of color, either in lead roles as well as behind the scenes. How about BET with shows like The Quad? We just had Felicia Henderson, the creator and executive producer of that series, on our program last week. John Singleton making a big TV splash, first with Rebel on BET, and then Snowfall, critically acclaimed on FX, coming back for the second season next year. And what about all the women of color who launched their own production companies this year? Viola Davis, Gina Rodriguez, America Ferrera, Kerry Washington, Regina King, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And while we didn't see a lot of the organizations that were aimed at expanding diversity among women and women of color, like We Did Together, We For She, Project Her, Made by Women, etc., come to bat with new series. What we did see was an expansion of those efforts thanks to things like the Fusion Creative Board, the Creative Center Foundation was started this summer, and also, as I said, all these women and women of color forming their own production companies, some of whom have already put shows on the air, others will soon do so. And I'm sure they're inspiring other active actors of color to do the very same thing. And how about, as I mentioned again, you cannot say enough about some of the mega deals that came out this year, too, that look like more diverse television will happen next year. Tyler Perry's deal with Viacom, Shonda Rhimes with Netflix, Will Packer with Discovery Communications, Ava DuVernay with Oprah Winfrey Network through Harpo Films, on and on. What a great development. And yes, there were some, I think, unfortunately, some backsteps. We did not get the Native American Television Network that we were promised out of Canada. We did not get more networks than Asian Americans. Comcast did not come through with the African American network they promised that they would announce by the end of this year, hopefully next year. Although we did have two Latino networks come in. Another I want to add also with Netflix, El Chapo, their collaboration with Univision, now in its second season, quickly acclaimed. I hope it will be up by the way for any awards next year. So you want to look at the back steps. There was much more forward than backward. And again, it makes you feel very good about what may happen in 2018. And when it comes to political television, we are seeing more independent production companies being formed, more companies expanding what they want to do in television, more exclusive deals, more of the filmmaking talent turning into TV-making talent. 2018 looks really good on both the plentiful and the diverse side, both in scripted and unscripted television. So that's my number three. Number two, until a few weeks ago, was the number one for me, and that is the American public embracing smart TV sets and smart TV devices. I've said a lot before, so I won't say too much about it now, but once again, over 60% of U.S. households now have a smart set and a smart TV device, and they are using them in record number of days, in record number of hours, in record number of ways, and the sky's the limit, I think, in terms of what you can do with these sets because, again, they are electronically upgradable. And that leads me to the number one development. Again, this is the development that was not going to happen, but I think because of what has taken place the last few weeks, we have to make it number one. The number one, for me, the number one development of television 2017, artificial intelligence from Alexa to Google Assistant to Siri built into the smart set and the smart device. And as Amazon showcased in a press release earlier today, we are seeing people now using these devices with this intelligent system. And I want to say about that in Friday's episode, but I'll give you a hint. I think it could very well end up being the trigger for the finally long-awaited era of interactive television, from interactive storytelling to shopping to banking to controlling other devices in your home to even controlling the direction of a television program. So my number one development this year, artificial intelligence on smart TV sets and smart devices. And believe me, like these smart TV sets and devices, artificial intelligence processes like Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, Bixby coming to Samsung TV sets next year, they will get better and better and more comprehensive next year. And there are consequences to this. It's not all nirvana. And once again, I want to say, we have to, as journalists, cover these latter two developments, number one and number two, much more thoroughly than we are doing now, both the impact, both the upside and the downside. And we have to make this part of every TV conference, consumer electronic conference, from here on in, starting with CES, second week of 2018, and going from there. And we also need to have the smart TV set native devices showcase themselves in a lot more ways. Stop playing like they're a secret society. Stop playing like they're in a foxhole. And get out there and show what these devices can do. And that also goes for the developer community that is working with these smart sets and devices to create very unique apps. So finally, again, a recap of our top five developments of 2017. Netflix, number five. Sexual misconduct, sexual harassment, fallout, number four. Plentiful and diverse TV, two errors in one, number three. The American public embracing smart TV sets and devices, number two. And finally, number one, artificial intelligence systems and services on smart TV sets and devices. I would love to hear from you. What do you think? Let me know. at SimonApple04@yahoo.com, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Or if you're listening, give us a call right now, very quickly, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And before we leave you this Tuesday, time for a show to know, where we highlight a program that you might not know about, because it's not well marketed, publicized, or promoted, but it's a program that's worthwhile to see. In December of 1964, Rod Serling became involved in the opening episode of a project that was designed as a series of specials on ABC to promote the work of the United Nations. He decided to create his own spin on the classic Charles Dickens tale, A Christmas Carol. The result was Carol for Another Christmas, directed for the first and only time in television by the brilliant Oscar-winning writer-producer Joseph Mankiewicz, and starring Sterling Hayden as Daniel Grudge, an embittered parent who is spending Christmas Eve all alone with memories of his dead son. He gets a visit on Christmas Eve, at the beginning of the eve, from a cousin played by Ben Gazzara, who wants him to be involved in world affairs. And he says, no, can't do it, turn away. No matter what argument you got, I don't accept it. And then he decides to get some visit, and then he gets some visits from unique Christmas present, past, and future. The program is very interesting. It's one of the most unique shows I think that Rod Serling ever did. And it features some performances that will really stun you, including one of the few made-for-television performances by Peter Sellers. It was his first one, by the way, after Dr. Strangelove, his first one after a heart attack earlier in 1964, and it is a gem all by itself. There's also a performance by singer Steve Lawrence that will surprise you. Eva Marie Saint is in it. Also, Pat Hingle, terrific supporting performances. I also think that Gazzara, and especially Hayden, turn in some of the best work of their careers. The program received mixed reviews when it came out in late December 1964, even though it did ultimately get two Emmy nominations, one for Best Entertainment Special, one for Technical Work. The big reason for the criticism was twofold. Number one, some people thought Sterling's work was a little too didactic. The other was the ending. It wasn't the rah-rah-rah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, God bless us everyone, very, very festive ending. It was more reflective, more melancholy, more wistful. It wasn't totally upbeat for some people. But when you look at it, I think it was pretty apt. And it was very, I think, revolutionary by Serling to do it that way. And I think, why not? Why not have an ending that was reflective, especially given the times that that we were living in, especially coming a year after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. For whatever the reason, maybe because of the mixed reviews, maybe because the United Nations project, which was going to be six specials on ABC, was only four, ABC never repeated that program. And in fact, the program was hiding in mothballs for 5 decades. And then 5 years ago this month, Turner Classic Movies found Carol for Another Christmas and played it in prime time. And every year since, it runs, one way or the other, on that channel. I really believe it's a show you should check it out, because of Sterling's writing, because of the performances, and even because of that ending. It also has a nice theme by Henry Mancini. It's got some good sound work. I really like the way this goes. I think you will be surprised, and I really hope you give Carol for Another Christmas a chance. If you want to see the program, I don't know if it's played so far this year. It might be before the end of the year. You never know. But if you want to find out where it's playing on TNT, Turner Classic Movies, and you want more information about the film, go to www.tcm.com. That's www.tcm.com. I really think you'll like this film. It's a real buried treasure that is very much worth your seeing. Well, if you have an idea for a show to know, we'd love to hear it. And if we use your suggestion on the air, you will get the credit. Why? Because that's what you came up with. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Let us know about the program. Give us the details. And again, if we use your suggestion, you will get the credit. Once again, I want to thank all of you for listening to this very reflective edition of Tomorrow's Tell Life. This is one of the few times we don't have a guest, maybe on deliberate notice, because we want to give you as much time to reflect on this TV year, both in terms of the key developments, but just as important, to honor the people in front of behind the camera in our Remember segment who passed away over the last 12 months. We'll be back for our final episode of the year this Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific. I'll be joined by Anthony Ha, the correspondent for TechCrunch. We've had him on before. We'll preview 2018, and we'll look ahead to CES, the big show in Las Vegas, second week of January, where there might be some very breaking developments, big breaking developments, in the world of television. I'm curious to see what the smart TV set makers and microwaves will do. We'll see if there's a technology like blockchain that may become a big factor in television. And, of course, what the artificial intelligence people will be doing in terms of capability of things like Siri, Alexa, and so forth. And next month, we will kick off the month with two episodes, also Tuesday and Friday at this very same time. And for the first time ever, we will have a two-hour episode of Tomorrow Be Televised from 3 to 5 p.m. on the day after New Year. That's January 2nd, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. My lead guest next week will be from the brand new Freeform series, Alone Together. We'll have the co-stars, creators and executive producers, Esther Bavitsky and Benji Aflalo. Also on the program, we'll have Mark Bishop, the chief executive officer of production company Marvel Media, that is bringing back a popular game show from Canada's 1980s television called Just Like Mom and Dad. It'll be running here in the United States on BYU TV, and he will join us. Also, Stephen Dose, the executive producer of the new Discovery Channel series, The Interrogation Room. That and more next Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, 2-hour edition to kick off 2018 right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up an episode you missed throughout the entire year, give us a chat. Give us a hear. All you got to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televise. Check out the podcast version on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Again, go to the iHeartRadio home screen at iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you get us. Also, go to podcast at the top of the iHeartRadio.com home screen. Click that, then click entertainment on the categories, and you'll find us as well. We really appreciate you checking out iHeartRadio. They have a great assortment of podcasts that are wonderful to hear all year round. You can also check us out in podcast form on iTunes.com. And if you have Apple TV, the iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. We love to hear from you. What did you think about today's program? What's your thoughts about where TV is going in 2017 and 2018? And is there a development that you thought was even better than the five we had? And what are your thoughts about the people that passed away this year? Love to hear that, too. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're emailing from. You can also find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. We really appreciate hearing from you. Why? As we say every day throughout the year, it's what you say. And why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and iHeartRadio. Our production associate here at BTR is Candace Williams. Anto is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonberg is executive content producer. And the co-founders of this very enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com, proud development partner of the 2017 New York Television Festival. And Audible.com, as we like to say around here, will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audio book and a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We'll be back here the Friday before New Year's, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, with our final episode of 2017. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you are doing post-Christmas or Kwanzaa, whatever, please make it a great and safe one. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.